for this segment of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and ultimately successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you can high-five the person sitting next to you as you tell him or her, yes, I'm in. And not only in, but in at the right program for you. Tuck at Dartmouth University recently announced a new global insight requirement in its MBA program. Today, we're going to learn more about that program as well as about the MBA program in general. This is the MBA program with the highest alumni giving rate of any MBA program in the world. So clearly, it has satisfied students, more than satisfied, thrilled students. However, before we learn more about Tuck, I want to remind my AST listeners of a relatively new feature here. We invite your questions. If you have an admissions-related question, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/7171, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask your question. You can speak using your computer mic or your phone. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. I also want to invite you to Accepted's How to Get Accepted to Top B Schools with Low Stats webinar. If you want to know how to deal with those less than stellar numbers to increase the likelihood that you will enroll in a great business school in the fall, please join me next week. I'll include a link in the show notes to the webinar registration page. And if you happen to be listening to this recording after we've already had the webinar and you are still interested in the content, we will post the recording and the same page will become a registration page for access to the recording. I'd like to now introduce our guest, Dr. Philip Stockin, the Associate Dean for the MBA program at Tuck School of Business and also Professor of Accounting at Tuck. He earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Witwatersrand, I hope I pronounced that reasonably correctly, in South Africa, and his PhD from Penn State in 1998. He taught for several years at Wharton, but since 2003 has been teaching at Tuck. Dr. Stockin was named Associate Dean in 2013. Dr. Stockin, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. I'm so glad you're able to join us today.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome. Now, before we dive into the Global Insight Requirement, can you tell us a little bit about the structure of the MBA program at Tuck?
Yes. Tuck has a two-year MBA program, and it's the only degree that we offer. We don't have an executive MBA. We only have a full-time two-year MBA program. The program is structured where the first year is populated with core courses. There are a couple of electives that the students can take in the spring term, but absent those two courses, all of the other courses are required courses. So Tuck is quite distinctive in that the students have this lockstep experience, and it has some virtues. The students get to bond very closely with each other because they're all taking the same cases together. They're all struggling with homework assignments together and so on. And then in the second year, students choose electives from a large, broad offering that they will meet their career aspirations that they have. You know, typically students, after their internship, have a much better sense for the capabilities that they should have. And so when they come back in the second year, they then pick those courses that will most help them as in preparation for their career following their two-year MBA experience at Tuck. Mm-hmm. That's just a broad outline of the Tuck MBA.
If one, let's say somebody is a CPA and comes to Tuck, can they test out of some of the basic accounting requirements?
Yes, Linda. Mm-hmm. What we do is if you are a CPA or a chartered accountant, as I am, mm-hmm. you would then automatically be exempted from the accounting course.
I see.
Likewise, if you've had extensive investment banking experience, for instance, then you would face out of, say, for instance, corporate finance. So several students do take advantage of this opportunity. But, you know, surprisingly, even though students could exempt from the core courses, they choose to participate in the core courses because at Tuck we have study groups. And it's during these study groups where students interact with each other very intensively. And what one finds is that the CPA in the group, for instance, chooses to take accounting, knowing that for the accounting issues, the student will be able to help his or her group mate. But then, you know, when it comes to other courses, say, for instance, marketing or strategy or something of this nature, they can benefit from people in their group. So while students can place out, and several do, it's quite striking that not everyone that can place out chooses to do so.
Okay, great. Thank you for the overview. What is the Global Insight requirement?
So our faculty voted in last year, in June of 2013, to investigate the possibility of requiring our students to have some global experience. And we formed a task force which met fairly intensively over the course of this last year to suggest to our faculty that our students be required to pick a global opportunity from a menu of offerings. And the faculty voted in June of 2014 to make that a requirement for the entering class of 2015. So that'll be for our students that are graduating in 2017. They'll be required to satisfy the global insight requirement. And essentially what that means is that our students will have to choose from a menu, and we've tried to make that menu affordable in the sense that there are consulting projects that are included in that menu that are supported by the clients, so the travel expenses and the lodging and the like will be paid for by the clients. But then we also have other types of offerings which are called Global Insight Expeditions, where the students will be required to pay for their travel costs. The program fees for in-country lodging and most of the meals in-country will be covered by an allowance that is part of the student's program fee, but the students will have to take care of the costs incurred in getting to the point where the insight expedition originates, where the country expedition originates and where it ends. And then we have also included in this menu, you might have a foreign student that is new to the United States, and that student might have an internship here in the United States, provided some conditions are satisfied, like, for instance, the student will be required to read a set of readings beforehand, and the student would be required after the internship to prepare an essay reflecting on some aspect of that internship experience. That internship will also count, in some cases, towards satisfying the global insight requirement.
I see.
So it's just a menu that we...
You have a lot of different options.
That's right.
Now, I was preparing for our call this morning, and I saw that there already are a lot of global options in the Tuck curriculum. Is it really new for the class of 2015? What's going to be different for future classes than now for the class of 2015 or 16? I mean, Tuck already has a really strong global component built into its program. And I read online that 2/3 of the students in the class of 2014 reported spending time in a country that was new to them during their time at Tuck.
Yeah. Yes, this is something that we struggled with. You know, do we make this a requirement? Because currently, you know, a large proportion of our students did have some international experience while they were here at the Tuck School. But the faculty thought that to become more global leaders, you know, if we think of Walmart, for instance, 1% of their stores were outside of the country in 1993. 20 years later, more than 50% of their stores are outside of the country. And
wow.
So it's pretty apparent that as the business environment has become far more multinational, it's important that students have global exposure so that they're more capable to lead in this multinational environment. But, you know, importantly, when you travel abroad, you develop a sense of empathy when you see people in different cultures. You know, you have to be sensitive to cultural differences. And we view at Tuck having that cultural sensitivity, that empathy for others, as being a vital leadership characteristic. And so by requiring that the students have an international experience, the idea is that our students will then leave Tuck being far more capable of leading in the global environment.
Okay, great. Now, how is this requirement going to be different than a junket or a glorified tourist trip? I mean, I understand if somebody's paying, you know, travel expenses, and if a company is paying, then obviously they're going to be expecting the students to produce something. But is a consulting component part of all the options on the menu that you described for the Global Insight requirement?
Yeah, so, you know, clearly to your point, if you're on a global consulting project, you know, you're working hard and you're delivering a product.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you are on a global insight expedition, one might might think of that as being, you know, just business travel, a facilitated business travel. We've been very careful when thinking about our global requirement to think carefully about structuring students' learning. So, for instance, before we visit companies, we investigate those companies, look at their financial statements, think about key features of the companies, about their organizational structure and the like. We then send those questions to the company that hosts us, and then while we're on site meeting with senior management of those companies, they then answer those questions for us. And then when the students come back from their expedition, they're then required to write an essay where they reflect upon an aspect of the trip and how that aspect has affected their leadership capability, or how it has informed their views of, you know, they, doing business in Africa, so or any other country that they visit. So we've been quite careful to be to ensure that this is a structured learning experience. It's you know, it falls within the ambit of experiential learning, and so we've looked at what are key characteristics of experiential learning, like reflection after an immersive experience, and we've built that into the curriculum that students have to satisfy to earn credit. So, so along the pedagogical dimension, we've been careful, and then in how we structure the visits, we've tried to choose companies that illustrate a particular theme. For instance, when I've taken students to South Africa, one of the themes that I was particularly interested in was organizational structures and how firms in different cultures structure their organizations differently. And so, for instance, you might ask, well, how does a subsidiary of a German company structure itself differently from a South African company that has subsidiaries in other parts of the world? Or a formerly South African company that's, for instance, now registered in the United Kingdom but has retained its subsidiaries in South Africa. How do those organizational structures differ? And so by visiting companies that have those different organizational structures, you begin to get good insight into how culture, for instance, affects firms' organizational structures. So we've been quite deliberate about how we've structured these inside expeditions. And importantly, they're all led by faculty. So faculty ask questions and discuss issues with the students about which, you know, they have their knowledge experts. So I think there's a lot more content in these expeditions that we've planned than one might have in a business trip, for instance.
Okay. Thank you. That certainly answered. So they're much more than a glorified junket. How does – well, maybe I should start first. My second question is where I'm going is how does the Global Insight requirement differ from the first-year project, which is required of Tuck students at the end of their first year? And maybe you should first tell the listeners what the first-year project is, and then you can – you know, we can better understand what the difference is.
Yeah. So – at Tuck, we have, like other schools, we have a capstone course that comes at the end of their first year. And what students do in their first year project is to either tackle a consulting problem, so they visit a client, and it might be a domestic client or an international client, understand the problem, and then they spend time thereafter tackling the problem that the client is addressing, and then the deliverable would be a report to the client where they offer, you know, ideas and a roadmap as to how they might tackle that problem. The first year project has two streams. There is an entrepreneurial stream for those students that are interested in entrepreneurial activities, and then there is also a consulting stream for students that are not interested in eShip. The first year project, provided it has a global content. So some of the first-year projects qualify for satisfying the global insight requirement. If the students, for instance, do some preparatory work, like reading a set of articles that highlight management practices that differ around the world that make them sensitive to cultural issues, and then if after the client visit, they prepare an essay which reflects upon some aspect of that global experience. So first year projects are satisfy a core requirement that our students are required to satisfy. And then if they have global content, then it would also that would allow them to tick the global insight requirement box.
Oh, I see. So it could they could overlap.
They could, absolutely, yes.
Got it. Got it. And this that's why also I guess the summer internship could also satisfy the global insight requirement, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, for some students who've lived in the United States and they might have a consulting internship experience in, say, New York, and they've lived in the United States, that wouldn't satisfy the global insight requirement. But, you know, if you're a foreign student and the only country you've lived abroad is in the United States when you came here to do your MBA, then that internship experience, provided you satisfy the pre-internship requirements and the post-reflection essay component, then that will satisfy the global experience requirement.
And if somebody does not use either the first-year project or their internship, or summer internship, for the global insight requirement, when are the trips held for the global insight requirement?
Yeah.
Are there options like between semesters? Is that how it's set up?
Yeah. So, Linda, what would happen then is the student would then either have to choose a consulting project. These are called on-site global consulting projects, and those are in the fall of their second year. So after Thanksgiving, before Christmas, and that will be a three-year in-country experience for our students. And then, although I'm sure some students would like it to be for 3 years. it's a three-week experience. And then the students in their spring break could choose from one of several global insight expeditions that we host.
Right. Okay. Now, what do you hope at the end of the day, what do you hope students will get out of the global insight requirement? What in your eyes will make it a successful addition to Tuck's program?
It's important that our students develop a sense of empathy. To be an effective leader, being empathetic, I think, is important. To develop an agility when faced with different circumstances, those are important skills that our students would leave Tuck with. It's a sensitivity to one's classmates. So, for instance, we're on expeditions together, you know, and we're traveling together for, you know, almost 2 weeks. You develop, you know, a tight bond between your classmates and also between the faculty and the students. So the objective behind these expeditions is to not only develop our students' leadership capabilities through, you know, developing an empathy and a global awareness and just a knowledge about cultural differences, but also it's to connect our students more closely with each other and with the faculty. You know, as our MBA programs have grown, and you know, Tuck is one of the smaller
programs. Smaller ones, absolutely.
We still have 280 students in each class. These expeditions that we go on are a phenomenal way to bond faculty and students. And to, you know, to facilitate the connection, because, you know, you don't really get to know your students if you're teaching, you know, a class of 70 students. But when you're together for, you know, 10, 12 days, having dinner and lunches, you know, every day and just, you know, on bus rides together, you do get to know the students well. And it's just a phenomenal way of strengthening the fabric of our institution.
Well, that kind of leads to my next question. Let's step back a bit from the global insight requirement and look at the Tuck MBA as a whole. Now, either because of or in spite of its rural location, Tuck has some of the most fanatically loyal and active alumni in the world. It is consistently in the top 10 to 15 across many of the rankings, both domestically and globally. Now, you've studied business in South Africa and at Penn State in the United States. You've taught at Wharton, and you may also have lectured elsewhere over the years, and I just didn't see it on your bio page. And you've been at Tuck for over a decade. What is Tuck's secret sauce that generates the kind of loyalty and generosity that it engenders in its alumni?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, among all
so
living
special?
Tuck alums.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
I said, what makes
among
it so special?
Living, yeah. And it is a special place. Among all living Tuck alums, over 70% of our alums give back to the school on an annual basis. So that is just a phenomenal rate.
Just to provide some context to our listeners, I think the next closest school is either in the low 50s or at most high 40s. It's not only that you are the best, you're by the best by a lot.
Yeah, there are very few undergraduate institutions that would have the same rate. Yes,
right.
So one wonders, what is it about Tuck that generates this deep affection that our alums have for the school?
Mm-hmm.
And we've reflected upon that. I think it's attributable to the value system that we work hard to develop while our students are here. You know, Tuck is the oldest graduate school of business, founded in 1900. And in the letter that Edward Tuck wrote when he endowed the school, he points out to two maxims. He points out to honesty being the best policy, and he highlights the importance of altruism in the conduct of our public and private lives. And at Tuck, right from first year orientation, we emphasize the importance of altruism. So we work very hard to create a value system in our students that, you know, just emphasizes publicly spirited behavior. We want that to be the characteristic of leaders that leave the Tuck School. And so that developing a sense of altruism pervades not only our curriculum, but also our extracurricular activities. And so I think it's as a consequence of this value system, Tuck's alums want to connect with other Tuck alums. When our students, our current students, reach out to alums for jobs or to, you know, they send them an email asking about, you know, or for advice, it is phenomenal how strong the Tuck network is, because my sense is that our alums across the generations just love to reach back to current students, you know, and experience and connect with people that have the same values that they have. So I think part of the reason why we see this phenomenal donation rate among our alums is that our alums have an affection for the school, and they're grateful for the education that they received here. They're grateful for the friendships that they developed here. And I think they're grateful for the value system that one develops mm-hmm. while one is here at the Tuck School. And, you know, it's not only a value system that's unique to our students. This same value system applies to our staff and faculty. And so it just contributes to a very warm environment here. You know, when one visits Tuck, you see faculty and staff and students interacting with a lot.
Good.
And it creates just a wonderful place in which to live and learn.
Right. Well, I've visited Tuck a couple of times. And as an Angeleno, I'm not sure that warmth is necessarily the temperature that is associated. But certainly I did receive a very warm welcome inside the buildings. I think, though, that you are hitting on something, and certainly that giving rate is phenomenal. I mean, it's the envy, I think, of most business schools. And if you haven't studied it, I'm sure they have, because they'd love to duplicate it. Now, I mentioned I visited Tuck a few times in the early 2000s, and I was truly impressed with the program and the beauty of the campus and its surroundings. I mean, it's absolutely stunning. One thing that also stood out was the cooperation, and you touched on this, among the faculty that the then admissions dean described. I think it was Christine Walker when I visited then. And I asked her about a typical day, and she said that there is no such thing, because the professors cooperate and collaborate in teaching. And sometimes the professor may say, you know, could I have an extra hour to present this case and present this topic? And the other professor will say, okay, but then can I have my hour back? And they'll say, okay, yeah, next week you can get your hour back. And there's apparently just a lot of cooperation and collaboration on the faculty. Is that still true?
There is a lot of collaboration. Whether we exchange hours on the fly, that's another matter, because
okay.
our lives have become so programmed.
Right.
But what we do, because we're a small school, we have 53 faculty, we lunch together. So, mm-hmm. you know, sitting around the table will be a professor of finance and a professor of marketing and a professor of operations research and a professor of accounting. And, you know, we talk about business issues. We talk about how our classes are going.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the MBA program level, if we do anticipate a crunch, you know, it's very easy for us to reach out to the faculty that are teaching in the semester and talk about the intensity of the curriculum for that week and, you know, just try and make our faculty sensitive to some of the difficulties that students are experiencing, because it's not only the curricular pressures that the students face, but then, of course, it's also the job search, and there are, you know, visits by visiting executives. And so all of this creates a tremendous amount of pressure on the students. And so we work very carefully, because we're small, we work very carefully to coordinate our teaching. And so before each semester, we as a faculty that are teaching that semester meet to talk about the weeks and the days that are more pressured, and so we try and smooth the workload and also try and make connections. You know, we identify, you know, we're all teaching business administration,
sure.
and so there are points of contact. And so it's during those meetings also that we identify cases where there are points of contact between the various courses. So I do think it's a very collegial environment. In fact, if I was to think of Tuck, you know, what differentiates Tuck, I would say, one, the warm interaction between the faculty and the students,
mm-hmm.
The fact that the faculty have multidisciplinary workshops, a unique characteristic of Tuck when faculty come present their papers is that they see people from different workshops participating and commenting on their work, and so that's a distinguishing characteristic. And then I think another characteristic of Tuck is just it's a great place for students and faculty to live. So, for instance, I go and watch some of my students play rugby,
right.
or I often see them at the restaurants downtown. And it's just a great way just to, you know, talk to the students outside of Tuck. Or we have small group dinners together where I've many occasions had students to my home for dinner, or I've been to their homes. My wife and I have been to their homes for dinner. And
mm-hmm.
so it just contributes to the warmth that I think differentiates the Tuck School from many other schools.
Right. Now, you've talked about the collaboration. I think you've talked about some of the things about the Tuck program that are distinctive, but do you see a common denominator among the Tuck students? I know they come from the four corners of the globe, and they represent different backgrounds, different industries, and they are diverse because they're picked to be diverse. But is there a common thread among them?
We certainly want to create a common thread. I think the students that choose to come here mm-hmm. want to connect to their classmates. They value sort of that personal interaction.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate that they're going to get to know their classmates very well, because, you know, we don't have, you know, a bunch of entertainment options. And so a lot of the entertainment that is created by the students. And so I think folks that choose to come to the Tuck School recognize and value the prospect of getting to know their classmates really well, having, you know, a meaningful discussion with, you know, every one of their classmates before they graduate. And that's the aspirations that we have for our students.
Sure.
So I think it's a self-selection of students, but then also there's a treatment that occurs here. We work hard to create a value system where we emphasize the importance of creating an inclusive environment, of being altruistic and publicly spirited in your behavior. So it's a combination of factors that I think creates the Tuck student, which we hope is unique.
Great. Thank you. It is a unique environment. I mean, I haven't been, I'm trying to think, I've been to Tuck a couple of times, at least twice. And one time I don't think class, maybe both times I think class was out of session, but we did meet with students and they were certainly absolutely thrilled with the program. And they did talk about the cooperation, the closeness with the professors also. Now, this is more, we're going to step back a little bit further. What do you wish your MBA students had learned before starting their MBA studies? What do you think they'd realized or recognized or learned?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I could say, well, I wish they'd, you know, taken this course or that course, but we have purposely chosen our class to create a diverse student body where mm-hmm. students have, you know, different comparative advantages, and so that when they are in a study group, and we formalize or form those study groups so that we have students with different backgrounds and different advantages, they just, you know, they get to lean on their classmates, and that sense that you can trust your classmate, I think, is an important characteristic that leaders should develop. I think what is most important to me is that we have students that choose to come to Tuck and have had a pre-Tuck experience that that they've been careful about, that they've reflected deeply upon, that, you know, every experience that they've had in their jobs before coming to Tuck, they've thought about mm-hmm. And reflected upon their experience, so that when they come to Tuck, and the average age of our class this year, so that 2016, the average age is 27. And last year the average age was 28, so it's shifted downward just a tad. Mm-hmm. That when they've had this very deep professional experience where they've reflected deeply upon the experience, when they come to Tuck and they are sitting in a managerial economics class, or they're sitting in a corporate finance class, or they're sitting in a strategy class or marketing class, they can draw upon their pre-Tuck experience. And so the templates and the concepts that the faculty are conveying then are useful, because the students can then structure their pre-Tuck experience. So what I don't really want in my class is a student that hasn't been deeply reflective of their pre-Tuck experience, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's fine. The last time I asked a B-School professor that question was a few weeks ago. Actually, it was episode 68. And I asked Dr. Scott Schaefer, who is author of the Roadside MBA, and he's currently a professor at the University of Eccles School of Business, which is University of Utah's School of Business, I should say. It's called the Eccles School of Business. He was previously at Kellogg. And he said, how much time do you have? So he had lots of things he wished the students had learned or recognized. But I think you're, in some respects, your answer may have been more succinct, but perhaps even harder than a checklist of things to do, because you're asking for people to think deeply about, I guess, where they've been and perhaps where they want to go.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could say, you know, it's helpful, no doubt, when you come to a program like Tuck, you know, which does have a quantitative emphasis on sure. accounting and corporate finance and operations management and statistics, you know, to have, you know, taken, for instance, math courses. But you sure. know, we do have a preterm math offering, so
that's Dr. Regan's, right? That's Dr. Regan's course, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, Peter Regan. Yeah. So I'm not. Provided you've been deliberate about your pre-Tuck experience and you're intellectually curious, then, you know, what you learn at Tuck will be easily assimilated.
Sounds good. Do you have any advice for MBA applicants to Tuck? I don't mean you know, the specific elements of the application. I mean, you know, more conceptual advice.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the average MBA student at the Tuck School or the elite business schools typically has about 6 years of experience.
4 to 6, yeah.
Yeah. Be deliberate about how you go about obtaining that experience so that you can make yourself more appealing to admissions officers. I think that admissions officers are trying to create a diverse class and to populate that class with people that have had diverse experiences. And so I think that, if, you know, in applying to a school, just try to be, you know, think carefully about how you're going to make yourself most appealing to an admissions officer, and having, you know, just being careful about, your pre-MBA experience will be important. Not to say that you have to have worked on, you know, three continents and worked in multiple industries, because, you know, that's not necessarily efficient. But just be quite deliberate about the development of your career path, I think. And then excelling in that chosen career path, I think, is key.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Stockton, for taking the time to speak with me today. I'm so pleased I had this opportunity to refresh my knowledge of Tuck's MBA program and specifically learn about this new global insight requirement. Now, you had mentioned to me earlier that listeners can learn more and potential MBA applicants can learn more about the Tuck program and the global insight requirement at www.tuck.dartmouth.edu/MBA. And we will include a link in the show notes both to that website as well as to the press release that announced the Global Insight requirement. And we'll do that at the show notes. And listeners, you can find the show notes at info.exip.com/71. Listener, I want to thank you again for joining Dr. Stockton and me for our 71st episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so will help us spread the word about Admission Straight Talk, because iTunes will rank AST higher if it has more reviews, especially if it has 5-star feedback. So if you think we deserve 5 stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.exip.com/71. Again, that's the show notes page. Or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted. And I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.